friends. It is Monday, March 3rd. Can you believe it's March already? It's 2014. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago, where we had about 3 or 4 inches of snow over the weekend. I really appreciate you joining me today on RBN. For people who can handle the truth, their website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit Spingola.com, where you will see the names of every single guest that I've ever had on the program since October 23rd, 2010. Just visit the website and click on the radio the radio schedule button. I have the giggles this morning. Please visit also SpingolaSpeaks.info, a site that one of our wonderful, very talented listeners created. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@Spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting Spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour when we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Michael Walsh. He is the author of The Triumph of Reason, The Thinking Man's Guide to Adolf Hitler. It's a compilation of Adolf Hitler's statements. He also wrote Witness to History, now available on Kindle at Amazon, and Behind Enemy Lines, The Reich Had Its Heroes Too, and he also wrote Heroes of the Reich. And he's got something new to talk about today. Welcome, Michael.
Today, this is the RBN Culture Show. Hi, Deanna. Lovely to hear from you again, and hi to all the American friends there.
Oh, it's just so wonderful to talk with you, and I received that email from somebody that, David, his name is David, I got the email maybe 2 weeks ago or so, and he said that he had listened to you on my program, and he just was so enthralled with you. He said, well, let me read you what he said. Because of listening to your programs with Michael Walsh, not available anywhere else, I was able to get in contact with him and request and then receive a free copy of his Heroes of the Reich book. What happened next is nothing short of miraculous. Very long story, very short. I am partnering with Michael to bring forth his amazing poetry via PDF ebooks and audio recordings to the world. There are 3 ebooks of Michael's poetry so far and a website dedicated to bringing them to the world. And that website is walshpoems.com. That's W-A-L-S-H poems.com. And there are 3 ebooks that are already ready. I'm just so delighted.
Well, that was a very nice write-up that David, my partner, gave me. And it's not generally well-known. I'm quite well-known, especially in the United States, Deanna, as a historian. But as a poet, I've probably got a greater international reputation. And yes, I would like to build on it because I'm proud of it. It's a gift, and I would like to pass the gift on to others who appreciate it.
Indeed, and I always love your poetry. It touches the heart, and I think that's, of course, what poetry is supposed to do, is touch one's heart. But yours is just, it's just different. It just has a different feel to it, and it's just, well, it's just you. It's just something that, I don't know.
Well, thank you very much.
You've got the touch, you really do. So yeah. I'm delighted that David that contacted you and has made this possible. And for people to access these books, they can go to walshpoems.com. And I do hope that you're going to share some of these poems today.
I got them ready for you, and just really so pleased about this partnership because you are the genesis, David. Very important, of course, but you are the genesis because of the RBN not being around, and we could never have got together. So you must take a bow, lady. You must take a bow.
Oh, okay. this is wonderful. And people can email you at michael@walshpoems.com. And this is just so nice. And the books are so lovely. Just so lovely. So well done. So well. It's just, I'm just so happy. I really am just so happy that this occurred.
Yeah, as I say, Deanna, the poetry seems to cross national boundaries. It brings people together very much like music does. And
yes.
It really doesn't matter very, very much where in the world people are. They identify with it. They empathize with it. And I think that's a very, very good thing when you're able to create something that does, in this much troubled world, bring people together.
Yes. Book one, it's called Swallows, Swifts and Flights of Storks, book one, and it is the heart-to-heart poetry of Michael Walsh. That is just the perfect title, perfect everything, and some of the poems are they're just delightful. They're just delightful. I think some of them you may have shared before, but I'm not positive. Soliloquy to a Beautiful Woman, that sounds familiar. Just lovely, 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 lovely.
Yeah, I've been learning a long time, and this gestation period to this level of publicity, Deanna, has been a very long time coming, and it's so nice that we're sharing it with you.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm just very delighted that this occurred.
Yeah, it's been, I was 24 when the first one popped into my head. And, you know, that's a fair while ago. But it just encouraged me, that particular first poem. And I thought, well, hi, Michael, you can do it. And I haven't stopped composing poetry since.
Huh. I remember... it's been several years ago that I used to write poetry, and but I was only in the mood to write poetry when I was in the depths of despair. I had a broken heart. Somebody broke my heart, and that was the only time that I really was able to produce what I thought was good poetry. I guess I must be too happy to do it, but you're happy, and yet you come up with these wonderful things, these wonderful poems, and you are a happy person. I can tell you're happy.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Pathos is really does inspire truly great poetry, and some of the great poetry, of course, came from the First and the Second World Wars. But it is the extremes of human sensitivities that is the most creative force behind good poetry. So it may be that one is intensely in love, or a love affair has come to an end, or somebody that is very, very close to you has passed on. There are all kinds, but it must be an extreme sentiment to inspire one to pick up the pen and pour one's thoughts out. Because the difference, I think, with a good poet is that the writer writes with his brain and his heart, but the good poet, I think, writes with his heart. Now, the ink is the blood from his heart.
Oh, gosh. Oh, that is an amazing thought. Absolutely amazing thought. All righty. We're going to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Our guest today is Michael Walsh, W-A-L-S-H. He is the author of The Triumph of Reason, The Thinking Man's Guide to Adolf Hitler. It is a compilation of Adolf Hitler's statements. He also wrote Witness to History, now available on Kindle at Amazon. And you don't really have to have a Kindle in order to read a Kindle book. All you have to do is download the software onto your computer or even onto your iPad and read any book that is available on Kindle. He also wrote Behind Enemy Lines, The Reich had its heroes too. And now there's something brand new, WalchPoems.com, where there are three books that you may purchase. And it's the website is just really nice. I love the color. And you have your picture there. It's just really nice.
I think it's the right color, isn't it? It's the right color. It's green for my country, Ireland.
Yes. It just could not be more perfect. David's just done a really great job here. Really nice. And you also have the audio files. Just beautiful. And I just really like the color. He's put red, he's put pink. It just looks good. It's just terrific. You said that the statements that you made right before the break, Poems of the Blood of the Heart. Oh, gosh. That is beautiful. I used to really, really like Edgar Allan Poe. There was something dark and deep and mysterious, and yet you could tell that he had suffered some tragic losses. It's terrific.
Yeah, there were some very great poets, Deanna, and the previous generation, well, going back to the turn of the 20th century, all school children in America and Europe were taught poetry, and although it's not necessarily the flavor of the month now, poetry has never lost its popularity. What happened with poetry is that the art, if you can call it that, was hijacked by a pretentious few. And when people started reading poetry that really didn't make an awful lot of sense, they went off the subject. And the feedback that I got going back to 15 years ago when I really started publishing and the anthologies that I published at the time were very, very popular. People were saying to me, well, I never liked poetry until I read yours, and it all makes sense. And I thought, well, this is the kind of poetry that people used to read before it was hijacked by the pretend lot.
Yes, yes. Indeed, because I think we all used to learn poetry. It was just part of literature classes in college and whatnot. It was just something that we were all familiar with, and I don't know what replaced it. I don't know.
After the red line, they want to have a look at Rudyard Kipling's If. I believe that at the turn of the 20th century, there was hardly a home in Britain that didn't have Rudyard Kipling's poem, If, framed and up on the wall in the hall or in the living room. This is how people were impressed by poetry. Every school child could recite poetry. The kids these days in Britain and much of Western Europe, I've never read a poem in their life because it's a lost art. And what I want to do, Deanna, is give it back to the people in its original form.
Right. Well, could you share one with us now?
Yeah, I'm going to do something a little bit unusual here because of the something like 400 poems that I have composed since I started when I was 24. Although I live in Spain, there is only one poem being inspired by a poem. So perhaps in courtesy of Spain, I should read this one out first. How does that sound?
Wonderful.
Okay. This is dedicated. We've got others dedicated to Latvia and Ireland and England and your heart, everybody's heart, music, a lot. But we'll go for this one. It was Christmas Eve in the Casa, on that charming Spanish hill, and high on the star-filled dome above was mirrored an earth so still. It slept through the noise and the tinsel, but it cared not when nor why, that men will fight among themselves, and they will never reason why. The chapel bells were ringing. Sorry, just lost my pull up there. You do excuse me.
That's okay.
It jumped all over the place there. I'll just start that again. Sorry for the unintended interruption.
That's okay.
It was Christmas Eve in the casa on that charming Spanish hill, and high in the star-filled dome above was mirrored an earth so still. It slept through the noise and the tinsel, but occurred not when nor why. The men will fight among themselves, and they'll never reason why. The chapel bells were tolling, they talked from bale to bale. High up in my hillside casa, I felt that God prevailed. A melody of eventide, each tower sang its song. In Andalusia hillsides, I dreamed where I belonged. In vales below the twinkle lights, a bed of stars it seemed. I found with God above. I dreamed, I dreamed, I dreamed. Let others do their worship at altars of their choice, but let me be where I would be, where God is given voice, where chapel bells are singing, where hills are filled with hope. From eventide, be by my side, my small heart filled with hope. Thank you.
Wow. Somebody in the chat room just said, the soul does hunger for things of beauty. And so your poetry will fulfill that hunger that we all have within our souls.
It's nice of you to say so, and I would certainly hope so, because it connects with parts of the body that other parts don't reach. Some music does, but poetry is an art in itself, and it's something that is very, very important to the human soul. And this, incidentally, Deanna, is one of the reasons why writers and the poets are the first of people who are swept up during an invasion, because they inspire other people. You know, when you get great composers like Sibelius, their music is banned, poetry is banned, literature is banned, because it connects with the soul of the people and it creates a patriotism that other forms of art do not, you know, provide.
Yes, that is so true. And when you set poetry to music, I mean really good poetry, really good music, you have something that does touch the soul, touches the heart. But some of the garbage that people now refer to as music is nothing but garbage. It affects your body in a different way. It is very negatively, and so I think that that your art, your heart to heart poetry is something that we all really need. And so I thank you so very, very much for sharing that. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Michael Walsh. He is the author of The Triumph of Reason, The Thinking Man's Guide to Adolf Hitler, a compilation of Adolf Hitler's statements. He also wrote Witness to History, which is available on Kindle at Amazon. And he wrote Behind Enemy Lines, The Reich Had Its Heroes Too. Today we're talking about his first three books of poems, and those poems may be purchased at walshpoems.com. And it is an effort by a gentleman by the name of David, who partnered with Michael to put this all together, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful results from this partnership. Michael, have you ever used anything like the rhyming dictionary?
Yeah, I've used it from time to time. We use anything that will help us, whether it's a clock or a light at our bedside table. Yeah, sure.
Yes, I bought that book several years ago, and Yeah, it's amazing how many things do rhyme, but not all poetry has to rhyme. It just depends on what you're writing and how you're putting it together. It does have a meter, but it doesn't necessarily have to rhyme.
That's right, and it has to be good and bad. It's like everything else, Deanna. Some pictures are great and some are not. And when I look through some of mine, I groan and I say, oh, my Michael, did I really write that? And, you know, there's other verse in which I say, wow, did I really write that? Now, what inspired me to write that? That is, you know, that is a creation. And it's almost, I feel very often, when I'm composing poetry, as if I'm not actually writing it, if that makes sense to you. Obviously,
oh,
the
does.
Pen is moving in my hand, but I feel as though it is being spiritually. And I'm just like a stenographer. Do you remember those? I'm just like a stenographer who's taking the words down.
Oh, I believe that completely. I think that, I think most of whatever good inspiration I have really doesn't come from within my own brain. I think that when you are open to a certain influence, that whatever flows from your heart and your brain is from that influence. And I believe that when you have a gift like the one that you have, that you have an obligation to share those things. You have a talent for putting things on paper that was given to you for the purpose of sharing. And so in the fact that these books are now available is wonderful.
I have a confession to make. One, it's very important, as we said before, you are poetry driven by periods when your sensitivities are being driven to the limits, and it helps to be relaxed too. So the confession I have to make is I take to bed with me, by the bedside table, a notebook, and just as I'm drifting off very often, or in the early hours of the morning, the first lines of a verse comes into my head, my heart, my soul. I leap out of bed, even if it's 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and I write it down as much as I can. The next morning I make sense of it, and from there on, hopefully, I create something which is very, very readable, but I don't know where the issue came from. As I say, I'm just like a stenographer.
That is very, yes, I feel that too often, yes.
Yeah, I'd like to take the credit for it, Deanna, and I do take the credit for much of it, but I must admit to having a little bit of outside assistance, and how we interpret that is entirely up to our own individual beliefs. What I believe, as somebody pointed out before, Deanna, is that poetry is driven by the soul, for the soul, interpreted by the soul. It is soul music.
Yes, it is. Well, share another one with us.
I beg your pardon?
Would you please share another one with us?
Oh, sure. A poem for her unknown. A picture poem for her unknown. Tonight, I'll write for her. I'll tell her how I love her much, her every strand of her. I shall wear her image on my heart, as in the candlelight. If it should take me to the dawn, and I'll sit, now dream, now write. The pen nib scratches as it does when in my reveries, and though my muse is far away, I know she's here with me. But when I write her poetry, in spirit we are one, and though apart as we must be, she's with me, though she's gone. Thank you.
Very nice. During the break, I ran and got some of my poetry.
Really?
I did.
I love it.
I have some tablets in the drawer next to my side of the bed, and it's just I always have pen and paper there, Yeah, so I ran and got some. Got one of my poems.
Yeah, it's a lovely topic, and it's lovely to be given the opportunity to read the poetry, to narrate the poetry, and for people to read it. And I do hope that many, many listeners that we share will get in touch with me and talk about their own, well, express their own thoughts.
Indeed. I think that we can write books, and we can do research, and we can talk about history, which you have done, and have done remarkably well, very concise, very accurate, but it's a different kind of writing than your poetry. Totally different. I mean, it's just totally different as night and day.
Yeah, I think poetry for me, Diana, is an escapism. You know, some people will turn to other pursuits. It might be playing golf or painting pictures, taking photographs. But, poetry is my thing. It is my way of relaxing.
Indeed. Yes. And you don't, in as much as it just seems to flow, it's not something that it takes creativity. But I don't think that it takes a great deal of effort. It just takes listening to your inner soul and your heart, right?
Exactly. I couldn't put it very much better than that. It is a wonderful way of looking at things, and it is the poetry of the soul. You know, other stuff comes from other places, but poetry comes from the soul.
Yes, it does. And I think that, and there are different kinds of poetry. There, as you read different people's work, you can feel something about them. You can learn something about them. You can empathize with what they're feeling. You can associate with similar things that have happened to you. It's just a heart-to-heart kind of a thing. And it evokes in the readers something that nothing else can quite reach, that nothing else can reach that deeply.
Well, your words are echoed from around the world. I'm just reading one here from Larissa Pavel, and she's a highly placed person in Russia. And she says, Michael, your words come from within the heart. Your pen is a conduit of divine inspiration. And this is true talent, because we feel this in our hearts, touching to your creation. Thank you. Ilse Dixon from Australia, you are a master. Nanette Ebley, who from Holland, says, speechless again, very touching and very beautiful. And a ballerina, she's an internationally recognized ballerina, and she says, exquisite. God bless those eyes that inspire these verses. And that's Svetlana Dion. And it's lovely to get tributes like that from such people who know, you know, good poetry when they see it.
Yes, and I think that's the thing. I think perhaps. Well, I got an email just a minute ago from one of our regular listeners, Joe, and he says, "Rap is the epitome of the hijacking of poetry, or rather, the debased result of the hijacking of poetry." And I think that that poetry has been hijacked by certain people, and has been debased, where people just simply do not understand or even recognize or know anything about poetry anymore because of this hijacking. Alrighty, we are going to a break. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Michael Walsh. He is the author of several books, and today we are talking about his poems. And but we do have a couple of questions from the chat room, and we also have somebody that that wrote a little poem. It's just two sentences, but it's really kind of clever. Let me just share it with you. The old world order got brittle and brittler with the advent of Adolf Hitler. Now, isn't that clever?
Well, that took a little bit of imagination, didn't it?
Yes. And the question from the same from the poet: does Mr. Walsh think that Hitler should have abstained from Barbarossa? And even if Stalin was poised to invade the West, the other European countries probably would have allied with Germany. And as a defender, Germany would have had the moral high ground despite the propaganda of the kosher press. What do you think? Do you think he should have abstained from Barbarossa?
Well, if I may just move away from that for a moment, it's not generally known that Adolf Hitler was a very, very accomplished poet. And he did say later on in his life that when he was a young man, all he ever aspired to was painting and poetry. And it was only circumstances that dragged him into politics. But to answer your question, there is absolutely now no question about it that there were 4.5 million Red Army strong, ready to invade Germany from the east when Adolf Hitler simply struck east before they struck him. So he took the Napoleonic adage of he who hits first hits twice. And he had no choice because Stalin was opening up a second front to the east. And it was a very, very similar repeat situation from the Polish situation when Poland was, he did the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact to guard Germany's back door so he could deal with the threat from Britain and France in the west. Now, once that pact was in place, then Stalin did the dirty trick of getting around the pact by preparing to invade Germany from the east. And when you've got 4.5 million men under arms who are ready to invade, let us face it, a small country, I believe that it's smaller than Texas, from the east, then you've got to do something about it. You either wait to repulse them or you attack them first and throw them back.
Right, right. I think that given all of the circumstances, I'm just not sure that he didn't do the right thing. I think he probably did the right thing. And I think that that probably had there not been traitorous people, traitorous Germans, that he would have prevailed.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, you know, with events as they are today, Diana, is that the Hitler's plan for Ukraine was to give it total independence so that it could stand there as a bulwark against Bolshevik Russia and Germany. And he never had any intention of occupying Ukraine. Now, Germany today wants to bring NATO weaponry right up to Russia's borders in the Ukraine. So they are doing what Adolf Hitler refused to do, and that is to colonize an independent sovereign state. Crazy.
Wow. Yes, and considering the things that are going on in Ukraine, and just awful. And of course, it's we know that the tribe is behind much of what is going on, and it's just awful, awful, awful. And there's certainly no well, when you consider the occupation of the countries in the Middle East and the occupation of so many countries as a result of warfare, countries that are still being occupied, I think it's pretty obvious what is going on in the Ukraine now, that it is all part and parcel of that whole occupation, the takeover of every single country on the planet. And
yes, sadly, I think, Diana, I think the last war that America will ever fight will be against its own people. I think that's the way it's going.
I agree. Sure.
The last American war. You know, I could write the book. It will withdraw, as did Rome, because there will be so much trouble in the United States that the troops that they're using around the world will have to be brought back to America to quell public unrest. They're already militarizing the American police, and it will just implode. And I would have thought that in a very, very short period of time, the Americans will be too preoccupied looking after their own affairs, the social breakdown, to be preoccupied by adventures abroad. And I just hope that when the social breakdown does occur in the United States, as it did in Ukraine, then I hope Putin doesn't interfere and agitate and provoke the way America has been provoking Russia.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's terrible. And when you consider all of the problems within the United States military, the problems with the psychiatric drugs, and which is terrible. I mean, it's just really, really awful. A large percentage of the soldiers are on psychiatric drugs. They have been used as guinea pigs with all the vaccines and whatnot, so that when they do come home, they're just not in any shape to really function the way that they could. So I think that the military is not only are they destroying things in other countries, when they get back here, they're not in any shape to be rational and to think and look and see what is happening. So I'm not sure that we're going to have any kind of protection, military protection, when the government turns militarily against us. I mean, they've already turned against us in many other ways, financially and in every other way. But when they bring in their militarized police, who have been trained by the Israelis, then I think we're going to have a very, very difficult problem. And I also understand that Obama has dismissed many of the military, the high military officers that could or perhaps would have taken the side of the American public. So,
yeah, all you got to do is add on to your acronym SR, and you've got USSR. You're there.
Yeah, yes.
You're halfway there, Deanna. USSR.
Yes. You'll have to write a poem about that.
I should do, yeah.
Yes, you should. Absolutely. Well, let's get back to your poetry. We've got about another minute before the top of the hour break, so let's just look at some the three books. My Faraway Friend, that looks like a very interesting one. Maybe during the break you could pick out some that you'd like. Oh, Footprints on the Heart. Oh. Sometimes coming up with a title for things is more difficult than coming up with the thing itself. But you don't seem to be at any loss for coming up with these fabulous titles to go along with these fabulous poems.
Yeah, they have to mean something. And this is what I was saying to David, is I think that it's very important to have an empathy with the poet, simply because there are some poems you're not quite really sure where he's coming from. And it's nice to have a little bit of an explanation with it, or an opportunity to give an explanation with it.
Sure.
Some don't need an explanation, but it just takes a little bit of thought, and you think, oh my God, I see where he's coming from. You know, wow, that is fabulous. Or I wish I could put things like that.
Sure. All righty. We are at the top of the hour break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back at 6 minutes after the hour. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Michael Walsh. He is the author of The Triumph of Reason, The Thinking Man's Guide to Adolf Hitler. It is a compilation of Adolf Hitler's statements. He also wrote Witness to History, now available on Kindle at Amazon, And behind enemy lines, the Reich had its heroes too. His website, the website that we are talking about today, is Walsh Poems, that's W-A-L-S-H, poems.com. And it is, if you visit that website, you will see three books thus far, three e-books, and they are available for purchase, and they are delightful, and there is a special. Actually, it's a beautiful website. It's spring. It just is fresh, and there is a special, and it is if you scroll down, it's all three books. Deanna special, all three books, $11.95, and you can just click and purchase them down there at the bottom. Michael.
Yeah, I think there's something that should be said there, Deanna. You did very, very well there. And, you know, this is in honor of yourself that you were, Albion was the genesis of this trilogy of poetry, that we do offer a 20% discount for your listeners. So happy birthday to everybody.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm glad that David heard you on this program, and that he recognized your great talent, because we didn't always talk about poetry. We talked about a lot of history.
That's right. We used to talk about other things, and you know, we've always had some scintillating conversations, haven't we, Deanna? We've covered a lot of ground. We've gone right round the world, pole to pole, and round the equator, you and I.
Yes, we have. Indeed, we have. And David must have heard them all and recognized the poetry. And so not only have we brought out the things that you've written about history, which you've done some remarkable things. And when I first read your book, I thought, how am I going to find this gentleman? I have got to talk to this man. And so I searched high and low for you. And you're not readily visible on the internet. I'm not sure how I found you, but I was determined that I was going to find you and have you on my program.
Well, you did it, and I'm not very good at marketing myself. I know what I'm good at, and I know what I'm bad at, and marketing is not my strong point. And thank goodness that David came to the rescue there, because he is my amplifier to the world, if you like. And it was David's inspiration too, because it's all very well to read the written word, but he said, as it's poetry, it's rather like reading a sheet of music. Unless you're the violinist, you want to hear the violinist play the music. And he said, people really want to hear you talking through the music, narrating it. And so on the website, anybody who wants to actually listen rather than read, they just click to the right-hand column, and they just hear the poetry while they're lying on the beach, traveling, doing whatever they do.
Yes, and that is terrific. That is wonderful because, well, you have a very distinct voice, and I think that the person who has written the poetry can recite it so much better because they know what they felt when they wrote it. They can resurrect that feeling, can bring it back when they read it, can put the emphasis properly on the right words. It is just, that is why it's important also to listen to the person who wrote the words in order to feel them. And you do have a distinct, wonderful voice, and people love to listen to your voice. I mean, you could rattle on about just about anything, and people just love your voice. Well, at least I do. I'm sure others feel the same way.
Yeah, it reminds me of a very funny but a very true story about Herbert von Karajan, and he was performing as a conductor at the Salzburg. And there was a concert on that was not particularly popular, and they had difficulty filling up the front seats normally. But on this occasion, the hall was absolutely packed and people couldn't understand it. And they said, well, they haven't come to hear the music. They've come to see Von Karajan conduct.
Wow.
Quite an interesting story, but yeah, it's nice to read it, because you're absolutely right. Is the person who composed the poetry is able to express its feelings far better than somebody who is reading it and perhaps not quite understanding it.
Yes. Two callers, believe it or not, I was just reading the board. Two callers asked that I read one of my poems.
Why not?
Okay. I'll read part of one of my poems. It was not long ago I existed alone, without inspiration or faith of my own. There dwelled a dark shadow deep in my soul. I knew not the things that would make my life whole. The contentment I then searched for was sought all in vain. A rainbow I looked for where there'd fallen no rain. A mind darkened by doubts, deeply saddened by fears. No joy to behold for a blindness by tears. But that's just part of one of them. I must have been very
sad. Real poetry.
Well, okay, that's all you're getting of my stuff today.
Well,
oh, goodness. Well, I just dug out this one. I think I have a more downstairs in the chest. But I just, maybe I'll get back to that at some point.
Have I got time for another one?
Yes, please, please, please.
This is quite a popular one, and I can empathize with it, and perhaps some of the listeners can empathize with it too. It's called There Was Something in Her Face. Right. There was something in her face that day, some sadness, hard to tell. But it was soul deep, shallow knot, that held me in its spell. I longed to hold it in my arms, for in my fond embrace, that I might better see her love, the soul light on her face. There was no peace within her heart, she yearned for other self. Yet all around was nature's choice, but lost was in herself. For her to share, her soul to bear, her heart was half complete. Those eyes told of a longing for a lost soul yet to meet. There was something in her eyes that day, a soul I couldn't see. They glanced aside, would often stir, but they rarely stirred at me. When hearts lie broken, who can know whatever pain's inside, that she might never ever be another soul sweet bride. Thank you.
Very, very nice. Very nice. I do hope that people will visit the website, and that website is walshpoems.com. Where you will see a lovely background, a fresh spring green background. And you can hear Michael read some of his poems, and you can purchase those books. All righty, we'll be back in 3 minutes. Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Michael Walsh, and his website, the website for these poems, are walshpoems.com, and it's kind of amazing. David started with this website on February 11th. He finished it on February 21st, so in 10 days he created a website, put together 3 books, which comprises 173 poems and 173 poems audio recorded. Amazing!
Yeah, we're both quite proud of ourselves. You know, he put together, you know, what I've taken over 40 years to compile, and he put it all together in about, 10 days.
Incredible. That is really incredible. Remarkable feat. And so thank you, David, for doing this. It's just absolutely wonderful that he did this, and that you and he got together and created this wonderful, wonderful site that people can access and listen to your poems, and it's just wonderful. We will take some callers at 800-313-9443, but will you please share with us some more poems?
Okay. What about a rustic one for about the countryside? Because you Americans love the great outdoors, and you've got a great outdoors out there. So, let us take the country lanes, make time to smell the dew. And if sometimes the quicker roads appeal to me and you, then gladly turn to where there is no paving and no street, for I would have no more than grass and earth beneath my feet. I sorely miss the hedgerow and adorn the curlew's call. What I would give to once again count petals as they fall, hear the gossip, maidens laugh, the songbirds gay and free, to stroll the country lanes, and just was you and me. There you are, thank you.
Ah, very nice. And there are, of course, many, many places that would apply to. But oftentimes we get so wrapped up in, if we live in the city, we get so wrapped up in the cement that often, and our feet rarely touch the grass or the earth. And I remember as a kid, I would just go out and spread a blanket on the grass and just lay there and look up into the sky and just daydream. Kids don't do that anymore. Yes, absolutely. They're too busy hooked up to their electric gizmos and gadgets and talking about nonsensical things with whomever. I mean, everybody seems to. Go ahead.
Yeah. Do you have any people who are listening to you that might be single? I'm sure you must do. So here's a quick one for everybody who's single. It's the table made for three. Okay. Why don't they make a table made for three? For when I dine with friends of ours, I'm asked, why only me? I shrug and tell them, you're away. They smile and say, too bad. Then I miss you most of all, and it's then that I feel sad. Perhaps the answer is to make, I've just lost it again, you're going to have to bear with me, my darling. I'll give you it a little bit later when I get back to it. What were you just going to say?
Well, sometimes computers have a way of doing that. They just move to different areas where you just have,
I can't memorize them for obvious reasons. And really, you know, perhaps I've been very, very busy today, and I put them on the computer screen. I thought, right, if Deanna asked me to narrate any of them, then they'll be on the screen for me. But you're absolutely right. I just press that little button to go down, and woof! I've lost the whole lot, so sorry about that, but we can give them that another time.
That's okay. It's just I'm just going through all of the titles, and they're just wonderful. And I'm looking at book two, The Four Winds Blown, The Unseen Guest. Unseen, but not in forest glade, the living dead.
The bloodstain, the resting wing, nature's bride, the golden wedding band, and on the opposite pole, the firing squad. The ghost's goodbye, indeed, for when eyes embrace a garden named Nadezhda, the immortal
friend. Yes.
Beautiful. Beautiful expressions of the human sentiment.
Yes. The ghosts, goodbye. That would be interesting. I really think that and talking about spiritual things, that that the spirit world is right here, and that people, when they pass, don't really pass into another realm. They just pass into a realm that is still here, and they're still with us, and they... Where am I going with this? I guess your poetry is just kind of awakening some of the feelings that I have about things, and some of your titles would suggest that you might have the same kinds of perceptions that I do about things.
This is why the Celts have the jolly wakes, isn't it? Because we believe that death is rebirth and we're going on to a better life. And who knows, we'll all find out something. And I have no fear of the other side at all. I hope other people don't. And in ways, some ways, I will look forward to it as a release of a kind. And I really do see a heavenly spiritual outcome to my mortal life, and I do believe that I will return.
Yes. Well, I think that there has to be something different, something better. I believe that as we come into this world, we didn't just... I believe that we existed before. I believe that we will exist after. And I believe that what other purpose would there be to just rot in the earth? I don't think so. I think that man is an eternal being. Well, you suggest that too in the poem called The Immortal Flame.
That's right. And the ghost goodbye. There was scarcely a sound when the horse went by, for the horse's feet were shod. You slowly tread with reverence when you take a man to his God. Muffled hooves in cladding and the harness tinkles low. Best to speak in whispers when it's time for a man to go. The trundle of the cortege fell on ears that favored death. The few will raise their voices when the passerby is deaf. The snort of the horse was part of the court when the cortege passed us by. As an old man doffed his hat, we heard the widow's mournful cry. When sleep will know not waking, when eyes will see no dawn, when breathing there's no fragrance of the blooms at break of morn, when the horse's black will sure come back, but the rider he will stay, for there's never a chance to say goodbye when you meet your final day. There you go.
Indeed. Perfect.
But you know, it was Spartacus who said, Deanna, Spartacus who said, I am no more afraid of death than I was of being born. So I think that really sums it.
Indeed. Alrighty, we're going to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Michael Walsh. We're talking about some of his great poems, and he has shared some of them with us. And I know that you probably get inspiration from so very many places. Might I suggest one, just an experience that a friend of mine had, that you might be able to create a poem about? That relates to what we were just talking about spirituality and about people not really leaving but just simply bidding farewell for a temporary time. A friend of mine just had, this is sad, just lost her sister.
Uh-huh.
Her sister had cancer, had suffered for several months with cancer. And had just probably attempted to delay her farewell for some time because she was concerned about her mother.
All right.
And her body just wasted away. She was dehydrated. And when it came time for her to go, in her last moment, she lifted up her arms. And my friend told me about this. And I said, I think that probably she was lifting up her arms to embrace somebody who had passed before, perhaps your father. And I think that if you, I bet you could do something with that. I'm sure you could.
I've already done so, Deanna. I've already done so. It'd be a bit too long for the program tonight, but certainly it's a subject, a topic that we could talk about, and we have plenty of poetry on the subject for future occasions. But there was one night, this is about 15 years ago, and I was going through a particularly tough time of my life, a divorce and that sort of thing, and I was at a really, really low point. And about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, I was on my own in the house, and I was sitting there, and I was just wondering what happens after we end our mortal life, let's not say die. And then all of a sudden, these words started coming to me, and I just grabbed the pen, and I just started writing them down. And I swear before my God that I was just writing down the words as they were said to me. And the poem is there. It's too far away for me to dig out now. And it's a bit of a lengthy one, so it would have to come right after the sponsors have been on. But I've always said to people, if they're interested, I said, if you want to know what happens when you pass on, this is what happens. This is what I was told happens.
Amazing.
This is why I said before, Deanna, I think we all fear any possible suffering as we go from one world to the next. This is only natural. But I've got absolutely no fear of the other side. And my son is a doctor, and I've told him, I said, Craig, I said, you know, if they ever have at the bottom of my bed, you know, do not resuscitate. I said, leave it there. I said, I've got no fear. I said, I just want to go quickly, quietly, and pain-free if I can. I said, but I've got absolutely no fear of being on the other side because I've been there before.
Oh, yes. Haven't we all gotten close to the spirit world that we probably, when it comes our time, that we're not going to be that frightened or resistant?
No, there's nothing to be frightened of. And as a matter of fact, I do remember my sister, she said, you people who believe in the afterlife, she says, you just cannot accept that it will all end, that it's just total darkness. I said, quite frankly, a lot of people would wish that that was the case. I said, so it's not wishful thinking at all. A lot of people have led such distressful lives, they would like total oblivion when they do die. I said, but it's just not going to happen. So, you know, live with it, if I may use that expression.
Sure. Oh, goodness. We do have some callers. Why don't we take a caller? Let's take Leifkin. I hope I'm saying that right. Leifkin in Ohio. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. It's Leifkin. It was a really good effort. Here, I'm calling from Ohio. I listen to your show all the time via the internet. And I kind of homeschool my kids at the same time. So sometimes I'm in and out. And my first question is, as I walk in and out, I keep hearing something about your show is ending on RBN. Is this true?
The daily program, this is the last week for my daily program. I will be on Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Central Time. But this is my what I've been calling my swan song week.
Yeah, I kept hearing that, but I wasn't for sure what was going on. You guys were talking about faith, and you were actually talking about that last week towards the end of the week, and I tried to call in and talk. I wanted to just give my perspective. you guys were talking about Christianity last week, and you kind of seemed to be right into the, you know, resurrection a conversation today. And I just wanted to say that I think, personally, that Christianity is a creation by Judaism, by Zionists, who would become the Zionists later, to control the Gentiles. And I think it's clear if you read the old writings, you know, the Zoroastrians is where they get the idea for monotheism when they were in prison there, and they brought it back, and their god, Yahweh, means king of the mountain, and his wife was a river goddess. There was a sun god. They're all still written in the Bible, and that's why it says, you shall have no other god before me, because, well, there are other gods, and it admits it. They can't take that away. And I think that that is the biggest mark on the European people, or those descended of, since I live in the States here. And I think that's really the end of us as a people, that we have gotten away from our ancestral faiths, which are very real and very vibrant. It took 13 crusades by the Christians to make sure that we no longer felt this way and no longer had a cultural identity. If you look at the American Indians or the Eskimos or Inuits, you'll see that they all live on reservations and they drink and they do drugs and they don't know their songs, their dances, their culture. And I think that's what's happened to European descended people. We have been controlled and now we're so ingrained that we've joined the group of let's go after these people. Let's go after these people because we no longer have a culture. And you can see the African Americans have come into this. And now they're all, hey, let's go after the next enemy. The illegal immigrants from Mexico are now here, and they will be going after our enemy, the Muslims. Once we defeat the Muslims, it'll be somebody else. And I think it's a tool, and it's the secret weapon of Judaism to get all the Gentiles believing. And they've even spent countless amounts of hours and money trying to convince certain groups, which are funded by governments, to say that Jesus was white and have a giant conspiracy in order to control. And I just think that if people get back to their culture, back to their roots, these ideas that you guys are talking about today, you know, like the feelings that you get, I think that is your culture inherently trying to come back out in you. As much as they've distinguished the flame, there is still an amber. You guys were talking about an amber last week. And that amber is the heart of the European people. And there's still, you know, many writings, many sagas, many stories of our ancestors that hold so true today and would bring us out of this darkness that our race, which is in its last hour, could really use.
All right. Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we're going back to the beginning because this is what we're saying. This is why the writers and the artists, the literati, are always swept up first by any invading army because these are the people who inspire their people. And, you know, they're the ones who have got to be got rid of. And when the Soviet Union rampaged right across Europe, they weren't only scooping up soldiers and obvious threats, but they were scooping up the literati too. And they, everybody else, certainly America, you know, you've got wonderful artists and great writers and poets, and these are the people who speak for the soul of the nation.
Indeed.
But in terms of reincarnation, I do remember at the Poetry Society, they gave us about 5 minutes to write poems, and they give you the theme to write on, and the theme was sweet and sour. I think what they were talking about was the Chinese food. So my pen just started working, and it was called the Reincarnation. Two mortal souls live sweet and sour, the lovers dreamed in garden fire. In orchards filled with nature's bloom, they cradle life and true. But I will love you, that's the call. Oh, oh.
I'm sorry. We'll pick that up on the other side. We'll have to recite it on the other side. We'll be back.
Great.
Welcome back. This is, excuse me, this is Deanna. And Michael, you were sharing a poem with us. Perhaps you could start again.
Not anew. We've done that three times. You know, where does the time go when you're having fun, Deanna?
I have no idea.
Reincarnation. Two mortal souls lived sweet and sour. The lovers dreamed in garden bower. In orchards filled with nature's bloom, they cradled life from womb to tomb. But I will love you past the call. Stay wed your soul past curtain's call. To love beyond this earthly place, eternal be your heart's embrace. My thoughts transcend. Oh, I'm sorry, it's done it again. It's done it again.
Oh, dear.
It just jumped right to the front.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Never mind.
Do we still have Leaf?
I'm here, if you can hear me.
Yes, I can. Mm-hmm,
okay.
We can hear you.
I was just going to say, on this matter here, you can tell that the matter of Christianity, that is, you can tell that just if you look at historical places, like the Vatican City is built over an ancient European pagan temple, and most churches, of course, in the Celtic lands and Germanic lands are as well, almost all of them. And you can also see in the stories that are left, certainly the Germanics were considered an evil people. And if you look through history, they've been doing that for much longer than, the 1940s or the early 1900s. They were considered evil people that ate people, that sacrificed their young. And truthfully, one of the funniest things that I found is that people believe that these things have happened, even though archaeologists have never actually found that Europeans sacrifice somebody. They make assumptions, like at Stonehenge, they'll find a body, and they'll say that, that body there had a wound on it, so obviously it was some part of human sacrifice, when, in fact, these were important people who obviously died in battle and were buried here in this very sacred place because they were a member of a elite family, maybe the chieftain's family or something of some sort. And so they've been building this propaganda for so long that it's ingrained in people. It's like the ideas that we see today with multiculturalism and, the ideas of certain things, the Agenda 21 and these things. They're building this in their head where if you have a conscience of ancestral faith or your ancestors, if you have a conscience of cultural belief or racial identity, then you're an evil, bad person.
Sure.
And this just all leads back to these things. If you just take a small glimpse at the history, you can see how poorly it's been done and how fantastical they've made our ancestors seem to be just monsters.
Sure. Michael, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it's a long, long subject and probably a little bit too late in the show to be able to discuss this at length. But, the poetry, again, when you come to the poetry, again, it expresses the spiritual feelings that we all have. And it probably does better at doing it than normal discourse, if you can follow my drift.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Sure. All righty. Well, we are moving on. Our schedule, our time is running short. Thank you so much for calling in, and I appreciate your profound thoughts. Thank you so much. So we're going to cut you loose and go on to our next caller. Thank you. Let's take Barry in California. He has some wonderful things to say, though, Michael. He did have some very unique things to say. Barry, quickly.
Hello, Diana.
Diana.
I haven't been able to talk to you because I usually work when you're on. I'm off on Monday, so they would call
okay,
in.
Okay, quickly. Quickly.
Yeah. Does he have any poems that have to do with Hitler or World War II or that era?
Probably out of the 400 or so, maybe half a dozen. But as I said before, it's rather a break from the rather distressing occupation of being a historian, a very demanding one. So the poetry has been at least from it. But yes, there have been several. So yeah, the answer to that is yes.
And just looking forward to you on Sunday. And you've done such a great job. I don't know how you do it, but I just thank you for all your hard work.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Thank you. I've met some extraordinary people, including our guest today. So I'm the fortunate one because of the people that I've been able to talk with and visit with over the last 3.5 years. Thank you, Barry, for your phone call. All righty. We've got about 4 minutes. Would you like to share something else? And hopefully we won't lose it.
Well, you know, it's not my way, but I thought it might occur to some of our listeners that I am deliberately reading some poem only halfway through as an enticement for them to buy the book and to see how each poem ends. But would I do a thing like that? Of course I wouldn't. So... Due to the nature of your wonderful RBN program, Diana, I thought this, the economic side of things, and a little bit close to what the gentleman just said, is Ode to the Ermine Bankers. Okay? Not for I a cathedral crypt, where lords and ladies gentle sit, nor thank me not with arch and column to mark my pact with fiscal Gollum. Far better I to rest my bones in meadows by the humble bones, of those before who went this way to earn the ever humble pay. For we repent and onwards plod, we till the land, we till the sod, but care we not for ermine robe or company of the banker's rogue. Take your crypt and record of your life of shame, but he above will judge you best what stone will mark your place of rest, the devil's mark. Mausoleum, glory be, but where I rest, my friends can see their friend now slumbers with the rest in their ever humble nest, far better than a hug from thee. There you are.
Wow. All righty. If you would like more of Michael's poetry, please visit waltpoems.com. You can listen to him recite these poems right on the right. You will see, just click, and you can hear him read. In fact, you could do this all day. Just take an entire day and just immerse yourself in this heart-to-heart poetry, heart-to-heart rhetoric, heart-to-heart connection, and purchase those books. Very reasonably priced, all three books. Deanna Special, all three books, $11.95. And you can purchase those through PayPal or Visa or MasterCard. And I think that it would make a nice gift to yourself or for somebody else. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, a very rich man in Liverpool said quite some time ago, Diana, he says, you know, he says, I work hard and I play hard. He says, but what I find relaxing, just before I go to sleep, he said, I read one of your poems. And he says, it puts me in the right frame of mind. And he says, I always wake up happy and contented.
Oh, that's a great idea. That is a really good idea.
Well, it's a lullaby for adults.
Yes. Yes, it's a lullaby for adults. Perfect. Perfect. Oh, that's great. I really appreciate what you've written, what you've shared with us. I've always appreciated having you on the program and hope that that we can visit again sometime soon. I will be have my program on Sundays, and of course I do a lot of specials, and I also have my American Free Press program on Tuesday. So let's plan to visit again very soon. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you, Diana. It's been a great pleasure to be your guest. It's a great privilege too. Thank you, and to all of our American friends, good wishes.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk with you tomorrow.